That's the bit that bugs me, is when they take your content, they put it up as if it's their content, and they cover your logo over and stuff like that.
Oh, fuck.
Like, you, with this show, whenever we use someone else's content, you'll see that we pull the screen in, we put a source there for you, we don't remove the watermark. It's like, no, it's not our content.
Welcome to That Tattoo Show, a weekly YouTube chat show and podcast
in a magazine format.
It combines feature conversations,
how-to guides and personal stories
into about 45 minutes of solution-based entertainment
for tattooists of all levels.
Streaming everywhere, every Sunday.
Anyone can teach you to tattoo.
And that's why That Tattoo Show is all about all the things you have to learn.
Afterwards, we're here to offer professional advice and insight to help you find the best gear
and understand and navigate the often difficult world of being a professional tattooist
and everything that comes with it.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Chris.
Welcome back. We've got a good show for you this week. Some stuff that I'm really, really excited about. If this is your first time here, by the way, welcome. And if it's not your first time here, welcome back. Thanks for joining us again on this sunny morning. I hope it's a sunny Sunday morning wherever you are. It's a slightly rainy one where I am, but never mind. Coming up in the show, we've got a really interesting conversation about AI and the beginning of the AI Cold War. It's all about tools that some people are putting in the hands of us artists to protect ourselves from some of these more unscrupulous AI people. Fascinating conversation. Well, it's a fascinating thing. I don't know if it's a fascinating conversation. It's a fascinating thing, so it's well worth watching. Before that, we've got some tattoo history. This week's is arguably the most famous British tattooist, I think, commonly known as the King of the Tattooists. That's George Burchett, or George Burchett Davis. Fascinating man, fascinating life story, very, very funny life story at times, and just genuinely a thoroughly fascinating character. I would have loved to have met him. Unfortunately, we live in different time periods, but this guy was doing, you know, cosmetic tattooing in the 1930s, which he invented, which is incredible. So look forward to that. It's coming up. But first, what's coming up is actually the news, but Chris didn't really have any news this week. There wasn't really anything interesting happening in the world of tattooing, so he decided to do an unboxing of his latest delivery for review, which is the Prime Pen, which, if like me, the appearance of a wireless battery-powered pen from Bishop and Critical, and I'm sure someone else as well, that's affordable. I mean, come on, like I'm all over that. You know, that's going to be fascinating. So I'm sure everybody will be interested in that. So Chris is going to rip the box open, show you what's in there, and give you his initial thoughts. And that's going to happen right now. See you in a bit.
Just had a package from Barber DTS, so we're going to have a look and see what it is. I'm going to see if I can do this one-handed now. Well, that's all gone tits up, isn't it? What is happening? So, yeah, I've had this arrive today. This is the Prime Critical that I mentioned in the tattoo news full set. I thought I'd do a quick unboxing and show you all. This is what you get through the box. In the full set, you get these. Now, you've got the pen, battery, universal dock, that. One of the disposable grips, which is great because it means that they've got disposable grips coming with this machine, and some sample Prime cartridges as well. You get grease, a little tool to undo the machine to get on the internals. You get some O-rings, some stickers, and then you get the machine. And this is it. At first time looking at it, it's got the same connector as the Critical Torque, which means you can use these batteries on the Critical Torque. So you've got a screen on the top, tells you what the voltage is, on off button on the sides. It's not a click grip or a ratchet grip. There we go. So you can put the tool in there, which will allow you to open it up and clean on the internals of the machine. Now, my understanding is this machine has got obviously the Critical battery, and it also has the Bishop Michelangelo motor in there. This is a 3.5, and we're going to see what it's like today. We're going to give it a quick test drive and see if it's any good. So I'm just going to bugger off now and start setting up and get ready. But I got to clean first. Get ready to set it up. But yeah, obviously, there's the second battery. Ooh, fuck yeah, hang on. With the actual battery itself, you get the RCA dongle with it, which means you can use the battery on other machines. So this could actually be a nice, viable alternative for other batteries that are out there, than the ones that are quite pricey. Now, a quick look at the specs of this and the features. Just looking at the Barber DTS website, they have a reliable Japanese brush motor, so a brushed motor is not brushless, which will give you that little bit of a feel of give. You've obviously got the magnetic connection, which is similar to the critical torque, compatible with the V3 and the Bishop Power 1 batteries. It's got a high capacity 2000 milliamp hour battery. They say that the prime battery used with the prime pen will run for around 7 hours from a max charge. So far, I've been getting 4 days off a full charge, so it's working well so far. It's compatible with most cartridges. It's compatible with the prime disposable grips. It has the jump start on off feature, and they also say it's got the best hygiene and extensive maintenance with the prime tool to disassemble the machine, which is something we've all been asking for. Dimensions are 32 millimeters in diameter, 140 millimeters in length. It weighs 180 grams, and you also get a 1-year warranty backed by Critical. If you look at a price comparison, now an FK Irons Spectra Flux Max Stealth with two power bolts comes in at £999.95, excluding VAT. But if you then look at the Prime for basically cheaper than what you would buy that Flux Max, you can buy a Prime Pen full set and a Prime Pen machine set. So that means you'll get two Tattoo machines, one with a 4.2, one with a 3.5mm stroke length, three batteries, and you know all the other accessories that come with it for the same price as what you would pay for one Tattoo machine and two batteries. All right, so I've just finished tattooing with this. I've been using it all day. First things first, the battery life on it is class. It is lasting me all day. It's still got a shit ton of battery left in there. I like the fact that you've got the magnetic connector, so if you wanted to use the Critical V3 battery, you can use that, or you can, if you've got a Critical Torque, you can put the RCA dongle on there as well and use it with other batteries, so you can use it with a standard power supply. Now, the one thing that I really, really like about this is you've got a plastic tool, you can undo it, you can get on the internals of the machine. This machine has a swash plate or swash plate drive system. It looks really good, really well made, and really well put together. I think this machine right here has proven to us as artists that you can get everything in a package that is a lot more affordable and is well made. This is a really well made machine. Just on my first impressions, I was able to do everything I want to do with it today. I'm gonna go away, I'm gonna do some more testing and just really kind of like try everything with it, and I will give you a full review. But first impressions, right, just from using it today, if someone was to turn around to me and say, Chris, I'm in the market for a wireless tattoo machine, and my choice is the Flux Max or the Flux or whatever, or one of these Prime pens, I think I'd have to say the Prime would win. And I never thought I would say that, because I really do like the Flux, but this is a winner for me. If it's comfortable to use, it's lightweight in the hand, it's nice and small. It doesn't know. You've got the screen on the top, you've got the buttons on the side, it just feels nice. I didn't think I would be lost for words in a situation like this, but I am actually lost for words. I think this is going to replace my Flux, and I think it ticks a lot of boxes for a lot of people. It's been mad, actually. Right, I can either sit there going, or I can go home. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go home, I'm going to have a sit down, and I'm going to have a ponder about this machine, and then I'm going to start testing it next week, ready to review. And if it doesn't break in the next 2 weeks, then it's going to be a good machine. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, Well done. You've made a good machine and you've made it affordable. The price point is outstanding. So well done. Well done. Right, I'm going now because I'm rambling and I will see you later. If you've got any questions about this machine, pop them in the comments below. And when I do my full review, my full breakdown of it all, I will let you know.
George Burchard Davis was born on August the 23rd, 1872, in the seaside town of Brighton. Known as the King of Tattooists, George Burchard was arguably the most famous tattoo artist of his time. Tattooing in London throughout the first part of the 20th century, he catered to both the social elite and the working class, as well as members of the royal family. The King had an early start as a tattoo artist. He practiced on his younger brother, Charles, who at the age of five was more than happy to trade candy for the pleasure of having George scratch designs on his skin. George also placed his scratchings on his classmates, with them lining up to get the chance to get his newest work. Unfortunately, George's tattooing business wasn't as popular with the administration as it was with the students, and he was expelled from school at the age of 12. No longer able to attend school, George decided to enroll in the Royal Navy, against the wishes of his parents, instead having his grandmother sign the required consent form. As a deckhand, George travelled all over the British Empire, with stops in the West Indies, the Mediterranean, Africa, India, and the Far East. He was most impressed with the varieties of designs and high levels of skill that he discovered in the native tattoos that he found during his travels. George also continued to develop his own skills during this time, tattooing his fellow sailors. However, the structure of naval life just didn't agree with George, so he jumped ship while on shore leave in Israel and set up shop as a tattoo artist in Jerusalem for a brief spell before boarding a Spanish merchant ship to avoid being caught and punished for deserting the Navy. George successfully eluded the Admiralty for 12 years but began to miss his homeland, so he dropped the Davis in his last name and returned to England, hoping that the name change would be enough to keep the authorities at bay. After returning home, George set up shop as a cobbler in South London and continued to tattoo on the side whenever he had the time and opportunity. During this time, George had the chance to meet two legendary English tattooists, Tom Riley and Sutherland MacDonald. He was impressed by both of the artists, and MacDonald actually took George under his wing and taught the young man as much as he could about the art and the procedure of tattooing. George continued to work as a cobbler and take on other odd jobs when he could, as well as keeping up with his backroom tattooing career. During his free time, he met and married a young woman named Edith, and they set up house together in Bow, East London. Meanwhile, George's reputation as a skilled tattooist continued to grow amongst the working class, and he was soon gaining clientele amongst the sailors, dock workers and transients that came through London from all around the world. In 1900, George gave up cobbling work for good and took up tattooing as his full-time occupation, opening a studio on Mile End Road and later near to Waterloo Station to catch trade from soldiers on the way to the front line in World War I. With a permanent shop to draw in even more customers, George soon became a favourite of not just the working class, but wealthy Londoners and even the royalty. Although both Riley and MacDonald offered stiff competition, George was able to count King George V, King Alfonso XIII of Spain and King Frederick IX of Denmark amongst his customers, as well as many leisured people of money, as he called them. One of his most famous customers was the circus performer Horace Riddler, aka the Great Omi. Omi wanted to up the ante by covering the tattoos he already had received with broad stripes and patterns. Omi paid George several thousand pounds to cover his body in that design from head to toe, creating the appearance of a human zebra. Although George gained quite a bit of fame due to his clientele, as well as being featured on both radio and television, he never forgot his naval roots and continued to count enlisted men as amongst his most frequent customers. George also caused a bit of a stir with the inclusion of his self-invented cosmetic tattooing at his shop. Women could come from all over the country and varying walks of life to have their complexions lightened or tinted by George, and would often stay to have a more traditional design such as a lover's initials or a flower placed on their legs or shoulders. Always interested in bettering his craft, George was also known to constantly update his flash with new designs, incorporating many of the African, Japanese and Asian motifs that he discovered during his days of travelling the world in the Navy. George kept up a booming business until 1942, when at the age of 70 he attempted to retire and pass the running of the studio onto his two sons. However, World War II sprung into full flight, and the demand for tattoos was so great from all the sailors and soldiers that were going to war, George was forced to return to help his sons handle the overflow of business, and ended up staying on to work in the shop even after the war was over. His work is still highly respected in the tattoo world today, and his life is the source of much talk and speculation due to his varying techniques, history of working with an elite and exotic clientele, and innovations in the tattoo business, such as modifying a very early version of the tattoo machine to his specifications. The King of the Tattooists continued to work until Good Friday of 1953, when the great artist and inventor passed away suddenly at the age of 81. And that's the potted history of George Birchett Davis. It's my contribution to the many resources that are out there. I find the guy absolutely fascinating as a human being. He's got a book called Memoirs of a Tattooist, which is a fascinating read. I just think generally a fascinating chap, to be honest with you. I find it amazing that he's doing that stuff like, you know, cosmetic tattooing in the 1930s. I just think that's mind-blowing. I did want to include in the piece that you've just watched a brilliant piece of British Pathé news that I found. It's old newsreel. It's nearly 100 years old now. And I thought that at nearly 100 years old, it would be in the public domain and I'd be free to use it. But unfortunately, it's protected under copyright still. And the cost of licensing it is beyond the budget of the show at the moment. So what I've done is I will link there, but I've also put a link in the show description for you to go and watch it. And it's actually footage of Mr. Davis, or Mr. Birchett. If you've watched it, you know why. I keep getting his names mixed up. It's footage of him actually tattooing and doing some cosmetic tattooing. Again, amazing to see that legendary chap doing his thing, and to watch the tattoo technique that he's using, I found really fascinating, because it, I don't know about you, when go and watch the video, you have to decide, but it looks a lot lighter than what we do these days. Those tattoos stayed in, and the bold will hold and all that sort of stuff. Well, maybe it doesn't need to be hammered. Very, very interesting. And enough of my waffle. You'll be wondering what's happening to this week's conversation. Well, this week's conversation is coming up right now, and it's all about AI. And I wanted to tell Chris about a new technology around AI that I've found that would appear to go some way towards us starting a bit of a fight back from the various companies that are stealing our artwork and not paying us. And that's coming up right now. I hope you enjoy it.
I've got some news for you about AI.
All right.
How do you feel about AI these days? Because we talked about AI about, what, 18 months ago now, when it first started
to
come out?
Yeah, I think with AI, right, it's got merits. It's got good points and bad points. Like a good example is, like, I'm doing a sleeve on somebody. It's all kind of like black and grey realism at the bottom, going up into colour realism and stuff, because he's got colour stuff at the top of his arm. Now, a lot of it is, like, it's just things that, based on, like, animals that he's seen when he's been on holidays. But he also wanted a phoenix. And obviously, you can't really get a picture of a real phoenix.
Has he seen a phoenix when he's been on his holidays?
Well, I know he
holidays.
Just likes a phoenix. Oh, okay. So that's just, right. He's also got a fucking
Welsh dragon. Where's he going on holiday? Middle Earth?
He's also got a Welsh dragon on his arm, like, so, you know, and you don't see them rocking around. Everywhere.
Well, not anymore. They might have existed.
They might have. But, yeah, so he wanted a phoenix. But obviously, phoenixes aren't real. You know, so you can't get a realistic picture of a phoenix. So I used Midjourney, and I was like, figured out the right prompts to come up with what could look like a phoenix, a realistic phoenix head. And it did do the job there. So I definitely think it's got some merits. Like, you've got to watch, because, you know, it's getting better, but there are still things where, like, I think one of the guys that I work with, he used AI to make a picture of some kind of gladiator. And I was just like, that motherfucker's got way too many muscles on his back. Like, do you mean?
Right, okay, yeah.
His muscles have got muscles, like.
Yeah.
And he's got, like, seven fingers and fucking.
Well, I think, like, the general consensus amongst artists is that AI as a tool could be really useful in our hands. But at the moment, because it's now very clear that some very sketchy behaviour has gone on, so 8 billion or more images were stolen from the internet. Now, they were taken from the internet initially, from what I understand about this, and correct me in the comments if I'm wrong, right? But my understanding of this was a for research project. So even though it infringed copyright, it was never intended to become a commercial project.
Yeah.
So the people that were working on it scraped copyright protected images or images protected under copyright from the internet in order to train the Stable Diffusion model and the other large language models. That has then been bought by companies and sort of in the way that you do money laundering, they've sort of data laundered it to make it impossible to tell where the original images came from so that they can basically claim that they're not using copyrighted images.
Yeah.
And that it's the AI is somehow generating this stuff magically. Now,
well, that's just fucking bullshit, isn't it? If the art didn't exist, AI wouldn't be able to make it. AI can't draw.
Well, but the other thing is, it's also like bullshit when you tell it to draw something and it draws something and it puts the Getty watermark on it. And
but
it's
where
did you get that idea from?
Yeah, but the fact that you can type in there, do Henry Cavill as fucking, you know, whatever character you want, and it will make a picture of Henry Cavill.
Yeah.
As, like, let's just say Batman, for example. So, like, that proves that it's using copyrighted material. Yeah,
what's come up recently, there's a few tools have appeared where artists now can go and you can... I'll put links to them in the description because there's a bunch of them. You can actually go places and go, you know, have I been included in this image scrape?
Yeah.
You put your website address in or your name and it will tell you if your artwork has been stolen. And sure enough, I went, put mine in, and of course, mine's part of it's been stolen, right? So I'm included in it. Now, in any other world, if you...
Fucking can't be well.
If you took an artist's work, stole it, copied it, and then sold it as that artist's work, you would be infringing copyright.
Yeah.
Now, what the AI people are doing is they can go, draw me a picture of a warrior in the style of H.R. Geiger, and it will render it. Now, they're actually using the artist's name as a prompt. Now, an artist are complaining about this, and there's litigation going on. There's a few... On the horizon, good news for us as artists, there are a few... I think around the world, there's draft legislation coming out to stop them from doing it, but they are... doing their absolute best to wriggle their way out of it and not have to play the game. And obviously these companies are making huge amounts of money and they can afford fantastic lawyers.
Yeah.
And there's every chance that they will get away with this, stealing billions of images and using artists' names to steal from them.
You play them at their own game then, because all you do is, like, you know, if everyone done this as a collective, there's no copyright on AI imagery. So say, for example, if that company used their AI software to make a load of images to make merch, you could take those images and fucking resell it yourself. Yeah. Fuck them.
Or you could start a Cold War against them. Maybe if you were a tech person with a soul who thought it was incredibly wrong and you happened to work at somewhere like MIT.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if you were, I think it's MIT that are doing it.
The people admit.
I think it is. I'll put the links below after I've told you this story. So Massachusetts, Chicago, isn't it? I think it's Chicago where this is coming out of, and I think MIT is in Chicago.
Right, Boston.
Correct me if I'm wrong. MIT is in Boston.
It's in Fallout.
It's in Fallout.
The institute is under the grounds of the old MIT.
In the absence of a fact, there's a very, very smart couple of people working university in America. Do they call them universities?
There's a bunch of people working in a building full of smart people. That's easier.
Where all smart people go to get smarter, right? You know, let's leave it at that. And they looked at it and went, okay, we'll make it. Is there a way that we can make it so that an image that you look at, so I post an image on the internet or to social media.
Yeah.
And you see a picture of something that I've drawn.
Yeah.
And you see a cow standing in a field. And so these very smart people went, is there a way that I can trick AI into thinking that that's a handbag? Right? And it turns out, yes, there is. So they made a thing called Glaze, right? Which is, you can download this. Get this. You can download this software for free.
Yeah.
Right? It's a completely not-for-profit thing. You run your image through Glaze, yeah, and in your, to the human eye, the image does not change. But to AI, it's completely fucking wrong.
Because it's all in the metadata of the image.
But I don't know, mate. I have no idea what they're doing. So the process of glazing images makes it pointless for them to scrape images. It's, yeah, a way of copyright protecting your artwork from AI stealing it, which is one thing. That's great on its own. And then they went a bit further and said, well, all these images are in a database. Can we poison the database?
No way.
So, because now this is the term poison, they haven't coined this term. This is a technical term, as I understand this. I might be a little bit wrong, but this is a technical term for corrupting a database in, yeah, some way by injecting a malicious code into it.
Yeah.
Right? Well, the point is, if these tech companies are not scraping the internet for copyright protected image, and you poison your copyright protected image, it should never affect them, because if they're, yeah, not stealing them, they're never going to get poisoned, are they?
No.
But if they get poisoned, it's proving you're stealing shit you're not supposed to have.
Yeah.
Right? So they've developed a piece of software called Nightshade, which again is completely free. You just download it and run it, right? And you can run your images. You do all the stuff that you do to your image. You finish your tattoo, you take your pictures of it, and you don't want it to appear in a database, right? You do all of the stuff that you do, and then the last thing you do is you run it through Nightshade. Now, this is where it gets fun. Nightshade is designed to poison these databases. So if you upload a picture of a dog, right, with Nightshade, eventually, it only needs 300 images for the poison to completely destroy it. And every time you ask the AI to draw a dog, it'll draw a cat.
Class.
Every time you ask it to draw a hat, it will draw a cake. Right? Because it can't tell. It's gone mental.
Yeah.
Pointillism becomes manga. Abstract art becomes something completely different. And it just completely destroys it. And what will happen is they will, moving forward, they will have to take any new scraped images and they will have to make sure they're copyright protected and they have permission.
Yeah.
So...
But this is the thing, though. You know, if you look at... Since AI has come out, you got Disney was the series with Secret Invasion with Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
That entire title sequence was all done with AI-generated images.
Yeah.
You look at a lot of news articles and stuff like that, that's online now, it's all, they're fucking off artists,
yeah,
and using AI-generated images. Like I said, I get the idea of it for if you need to create reference to draw something from because it doesn't exist in real life.
So,
I understand that, but when you've got companies that are deciding to completely fuck off artists...
Well, on that topic, the last piece of research that I saw on that, and I can't remember if it was jobs that are in danger or jobs that have gone. America alone, 9 million artists are either facing losing their job or have already lost their job. 9 million in the US alone. That means that in Europe, you'll probably lose at least 9 million.
Do you know what's really fucked up about that, though? I'm sorry if you are one of these people, right? But what's really fucked up about that is... You've got 9 million people, right, that have lost their fucking jobs because of AI. And what you've got replacing them is fucking, you know, probably millions of untalented cuts using AI, saying that they're AI artists and, yeah, they're fucking making artwork using AI. Like, yeah, I see one guy has made an entire comic book from scratch.
Yeah.
And it's just like, so instead of paying an artist to draw it, you've fucking fucked that off.
Well, the latest thing that's come out with it, because I'm on both sides of this, because some of the latest improvements in Midjourney are consistent styles. Because what you couldn't do in Midjourney was have it draw the same character consistently frame to frame.
Yeah.
But now it can. So you could draw a comic book with AI. The problem is that it's using stolen imagery to learn from. And those artists, it could draw it in the style of Mobius, but Mobius isn't going to get paid. One of the ways that you can fight back, if you're really concerned about this, it's a real bugbear for me, because I think creativity and art is a big fucking deal. And I think we really need it. And I read a quote about, what AI should be doing is the tedious work for creative people, but instead it's doing creative work for tedious people.
Dude, it's really fucking... You know? I'm on a group, right, on Facebook with Midjourney, because it's fucking hilarious. You've got all these people on it that are legit calling themselves artists, and they're asking how to do things, right, that, how do I add curved font to my fucking image in Midjourney, and everyone's just like, use Photoshop, you fucking idiot, or use Illustrator.
Yeah, you don't care.
And it's like, once you get to a point, then you realise you're going to need a fucking proper artist.
You'll need an artist.
Yeah.
But I think one of the nice effects that it's having that I noticed, and as a sort of halo effect, is that the American government have put forward some legislation that hasn't gone through yet, but it's being looked at, is a minimum living wage for creative people, particularly musicians who are being ripped off. So they're on about putting an enforced number on Spotify. So when you sign up to Spotify, a percentage of that money that you give to Spotify every month for your membership, the government will take at source and give to artists and musicians not being paid, which I think is really good. So I think one of the effects of AI, and it's stealing from so many people, is that it's woke people up to the fact that actually creativity is really important and we need it. And so hopefully this will be a great move forward. Now, you might be thinking at this point, like I was, how do I get Nightshade? Right, so all the links will be in the description down below. There is a bit of a fly in the ointment at the moment, right, because obviously this was done by really, really clever people with really massive fucking computers that are really fast.
I thought you could say, like, massive brains.
They've got massive brains as well.
clever people with massive brains.
But they've got kick-ass computers, right? They're not trying to do this shit on an iPad, right? So it's very, very GPU-dependent at the moment.
Yeah.
So with my Mac, for instance, I've got an M1 Mac. It was going to take, like, for a one meg image, it was going to take like 80 minutes to process it.
I got 32 gig of RAM.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really GPU dependent, really. Like, CPU processing is pretty painful, to be honest with you. So if you're a gamer and you've got a GPU, you know, and all that sort of stuff, you'll be all good. That'll be great. For me personally, it was a bit of a no-go. But what I did find was they've got a web service that they're doing. Now, this is a really small team of people, so you've got to send them a message, and they're about week or two weeks behind on memberships at the moment. So it's you go there, you send them a request, they'll ask you for some information about your artwork, and then they send you a login, and you can upload your images and process them online.
Yeah.
Because they're an ethical company, they promise not to share your images anywhere. It won't be used as a database to scrape fucking images or anything like that. So by the time you're watching this, hopefully, you know, that'll be a little bit quicker. And you go, you follow the Glaze link to do that, because it's Glaze, Web Glaze, I think it's called. But Nightshade is going to become a checkbox. So you upload your image, glaze it, Nightshade it, fuck AI.
That's fucking class. You know,
and the great thing about this is, the more of us that do it, the more of these databases that are likely to get poisoned, and the worse it'll get. So this is something, even if it's not something you're going to do, tell everybody you know about it.
Yeah.
Because some of us are less hardcore about this than others. But if you know people that, like me, are really pissed off about this stuff, just tell them about it and let them do it, you know.
But it's that thing, isn't it? It's like, and I understand that, if you want to if you've got a specific image in your mind and you want a photorealistic looking fucking person's face that you can use as reference to draw from, like, I get that. But then it's like, if somebody goes in and goes, I want this tattoo done, I want this design with this done in the style of Paul Talbot, that's where it's fucking wrong. Like, I've tried doing it. It can't do your style. It's fucking terrible at it. Like,
no, you just can't do it.
You know, that's when we had the conversation about it. I was like, I wonder if we could do Paul Talbot style. Yeah. It was just like no background and a couple of red spots.
Well, see, like, if you checked it now, because it's scraped to my website, you might find it can now.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, I just think that a lot of this is the, pay the creators. You know, if you're using another person's work to generate your own artwork, like I use photographs all the time, and whenever I'm using a photographer's work, I pay a little bit for the...
But it's no different than fucking us. It's like, we make videos for certain companies and we have agreements with them. Like, it's like, yeah, we make a video, you can put it up on your fucking, you add those collaborators, and then you get companies that will just straight up download our videos and use them on their platforms.
As free promotional videos for them.
I had to message someone the other day. I woke up the other morning and it's like Painful Pleasures had taken one of our videos, put it up on their thing, and I was just like, with all due respect, can you take that down? Because number one, you haven't asked. And number
the other problem is that they'll get copyright claims because we have to license the music that we use and all that. We have to pay for that, you know what I mean? But I believe in you know, I use another musician's music. I believe in paying that musician. Right?
But if people not asking, that's the bit that fucks me off. If they just turn around to me and said, oh, do you mind if we share it? I would have gone like, yeah, share it. Don't fucking download it and put it up as your own piece of content.
Well, that's the bit that bugs me is when they take your content, they put it up as if it's their content and they cover your logo over and stuff like that.
Oh, fuck.
Like, with this show, whenever we use someone else's content, you'll see that we pull the screen in, we put a source there for you. We don't remove the watermark. It's like, no, it's not our content.
Yeah.
Because we're allowed, you know, we can use it like that then. But yeah, so that's the fight back against AI. The Cold War has begun. Join the revolution. Nightshade and glaze your images and fuck AI, you know, basically. Until they decide to make AI a tool for artists rather than a replacement for artists. Until that point, you can shove your AI up your arse.
Yeah, they should need to stop calling it fucking AI as well, because it's not even fucking AI. It's just machine learning. It's ML, if anything.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know enough about that because I don't care. This has been That Tattoo Show. I've been Paul.
And I have been Chris.
That Tattoo Show is made possible in part with the help of all of our friends. So thank you to Rob from Electrum, to Perry from Total Tattoo Magazine, and to our growing band of executive producers, the Purple Handed Preachers. We can't do this without you, and we appreciate every single one of you. So on behalf of myself and Chris, thank you all sincerely for your help. We really do appreciate it.